So what do you have planned for next week's episode?
I'm writing it.
Yeah.
I am the one who writes.
You're teaching a new system. Because this will be eligible for next year's Emmys, right? Live for the Mundangerous Psych Ward in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 142 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're losing our minds as we talk about insanity. But first, the Rogue Traders face an unknown enemy in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign. And later, the Mind Piercer scrambles brains in the Character Creation Forge. So I believe that the first setting book for the Genesis system is now shipping, Realms of Terranoth. What is Realms of Terranoth?
It is the campaign setting derived from the Rune Wars board game slash like war game, I guess.
It sounds like a mobile game.
It does, kind of, yeah.
Do you collect gems?
Yes, well, only in threes. Yeah, it's a pattern
color,
magic.
Right,
yeah.
And not diagonally.
Right, no.
Is it like Pirates of Darkwater, where you're collecting the
oh, God, I don't remember the plot of that. Yeah.
The Jewels of Rune?
No, I can go ahead
and say. It's Octopond. It's the name of the country.
Okay. Man. Pirates of Darkwater was a difficult show to get into for a kid with a short attention span.
Look, okay, I was really into it, and then they never ended it, right? It was like one of the first things I watched that was like serialized, and you were like, oh yeah, they've got like 4 gems. This is awesome, and they're going to get all like 13 of them, and then it just like show wasn't on the air anymore.
And then you didn't buy enough action figures, so
right, that's exactly
congratulations.
It. I bought no action figures.
Anyway, so I don't know a lot about the Rune War setting, but I am twofold interested in the Realms of Terranoth book. One, because Rune Wars is a big property that I know nothing about, so it's a total blind spot. And second, because it's our first glimpse into what Genesis will look like as a complete system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like we talked about when we reviewed it, that the core rulebook is very much setting up a toolkit for the GM and players to sort of build the setting and the rules that they need. Right, and it's good. It's a good start point, but it kind of requires some heavy lifting. But this, I expect, will have done that heavy lifting and applied it to a given setting. So not only is it more stuff to draw from, but it's also sort of a blueprint for what the line of Genesis should look like.
Yeah, the online Genesis community is rife with fan-made homebrew settings, which is exactly what it's designed to facilitate.
Yeah, and it's about to have a homebrewed birthright war campaign setting because we're about to redo that.
Because we hate drawing those cards.
Yeah, so we didn't mention that in the birthright review, but God, that combat system sucks.
It's super random. Super duper random.
Ugh. Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, so I'm really excited to, have a full, multi-hundred page setting book out there with all of the information about races and equipment that other homebrewers will then be able to cannibalize in creating their own settings.
Yeah, and I also like that it's truly a fantasy setting. So it will be distinct from the Star Wars line, right? Like a lot of the inspiration, obviously, for Genesis came from what had been built for the Star Wars narrative dice system. Now we'll be looking at it from a fantasy perspective.
Which is pretty sweet. So we plan to get our hands on it and give you I guess we're not really doing a review. We're probably just doing a campaign setting episode, actually.
Yeah.
Good. So stay on the lookout for that. We'll announce it. So speaking of a game system from Fantasy Flight.
How about
Shane?
Speaking of announcements.
Yeah, leave it in. Shane, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our prologue. God damn it.
Our prolapse.
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40k Rogue Trader game, played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games. And on the Dead World Malajack, the Rogue Traders and their two best companies of armsmen have located the Verza House, an ancient obsidian fortress once occupied by the fallen Dark Angel, Lord Cypher.
We also located some Lazfire inside our faces.
Yeah, so...
because we're getting attacked.
And you also located a mysterious stranger halfway across the valley.
Man, just so many discoveries. none of it is loot.
Right.
All of it is death.
So first came Major Barrow, who is one of rival Rogue Trader Duhan Roth's armsmen, sent to broker an alliance between the two of you to try and get out from under the thumb of the Dark Angel and Inquisitor who are holding you here on Malajack.
Yeah, his thumb is giant. Hers is very small and petite, but surprisingly strong.
Yeah. and after kind of, you know, interrogating him, debriefing him, sort of understanding where he's coming from, you hear the aforementioned Lazfire coming from the upper casements of the fortress, the sort of the highest levels.
But don't worry, we are prepared. Trank takes some armsmen from the lower levels and rushes to the casements to reinforce them, and finds most people dead. And the survivors are heavily wounded and shell-shocked. So all that's left to do is gather the remaining men who are alive and get a situation report.
Yeah, so your armsmen report that these enemies came upon them from nowhere. They were in amongst them, even between the casements, before any alert was even raised.
Which doesn't make any sense because we are on the top of a fortress.
Right.
We are at the top,
and you
that
were
all, overlooks a valley.
And they're, you know, they're in casements, staring out the window at the points of entry. So how is this happening? Then, as soon as the armsmen got like sort of mustered and reinforced, and were able to mount any type of real, you know, resistance, the enemies like disappeared,
like
retreated, regrouped, and were gone.
Because, okay, so the armsmen very nearly gave as good as they got. They did hit some enemies. They saw them fall, but then there are no bodies amongst the dead. There are no bodies on the ground. At least, no enemy bodies.
No enemy bodies. There's plenty of bodies. There's a lot of carnage. But it is all Imperial carnage. And then most disturbing is that the reports are that the enemies themselves were either faceless men or sort of these mocking ghouls clad in all black with these strange Laz weapons, right? They have a wound pattern like Laz weapons, but seem stronger and didn't look like Imperial weapons.
Which intrigues Trank. New weapons.
Yeah, and I mean, Trank, you use a pulse rifle, so... Trank understands that, like, you know, it could be a pulse weapon, something in that pattern. You know, there's other energy weapons, right? It doesn't sound like plasma, but it could be. You know, so it either way, it's a technology thing, right? Not a natural thing.
But either way, they fought like they were drilled infantry in close quarters, which is concerning. Well-trained ninja infantry with awesome weapons.
Which, is about the tipping point for Draco. So if you'll recall, Archmilitant Draco.
Yeah, the guy who's in charge of away missions.
Correct. He had a rough night, if you recall. He's short on sleep. He didn't have a great restful sleep himself. But then he kept getting awoken by the other members of the command cadre and their lousy dreams, right? He kept having to shake people awake who were screaming. He kept getting woken up to investigate strange bumps in the night. He's not doing so hot. And he breaks. He starts screaming, "They're in the walls, man. They're in the freaking walls." And he's freaking out, and you've got to get him under control.
I mean, this is less crazy than it sounds, simply because maybe they were in the walls. We have no idea where they came from.
Right.
Also, boys and girls, get 8 hours sleep, okay? Otherwise you go insane and Zinch takes your soul.
So Draco is fully panicked, but still has chain of command. So against your encouragement, he still orders a full retreat from the upper casements, right? Like, he wants to consolidate all of the forces in the only safe space that you know for sure, which is the main hall, then after withdrawing wants to resecure the entire fortress.
Oh, so the main hall where Trix saw a painting bleed. Yeah, that one?
Yeah, that one.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. This will work out very well.
Don't worry, because before you can actually muster that full withdrawal, you get reports of some more last shots.
And we'll find out where they're coming from next week.
So this week, very fittingly, we are talking about insanity and madness.
Yeah, both at the same time.
So insanity is an RPG trope as old as RPGs themselves.
Trope as old as time. Madness as old as rhyme.
So original D&D had mind-affecting magic that, hallucinatory terrain and all those types of things that induced insanity. Then Call of Cthulhu, not too long afterwards, had its own insanity track as damage. And between the two, those have been, I think, ever-present in the hobby ever since.
Yeah, I think we talk about, every time we come across a game system where, you have insanity points or, it builds up to a point where you become crazy and an NPC, it's like, oh, okay, second hit point track.
Right, yeah. Sometimes it's not called insanity. Sometimes it's called stability, you know.
Dark Heresy actually has two. It's got insanity and corruption.
Yeah, well, corruption is more like...
Different thing. We'll get into that later.
Yeah. So insanity is... mental illness, right? It's a lot of times it's like foolish, frenzied, or chaotic and unpredictable behavior that befalls a character.
Yeah, it's an umbrella term for many different game effects that aren't necessarily modeled well from the way they are in the real world, right? Because, there are lots of mental illnesses that don't make you like babbling and incoherent and willing to attack allies.
Yeah, I would really like for me to like max out my insanity in Call of Cthulhu and then like develop severe ADD. I'm just non-functioning because I can't focus.
It turns out I'm a sociopath. Well, yes, you're an adventurer. Okay. And?
Deep ones are real and squirrel.
So it's important to remember that what constitutes insanity is judged from a character's baseline perspective, right? So if you have a realistic setting, if you believe in, crazy things like aliens or, the fluoride in the water makes the frogs gay.
Whoa, hold on.
Oh, is that true? That's true?
Is that crazy? Because we know they'll switch teams if you Jurassic Park them.
Look, life finds a way.
Right. Less accurate conspiracies like Deep Ones or Elder Gods, those types of things.
Right. In a realistic setting, believing those things makes you crazy. Obviously, in a setting where things like that are more plausible, it doesn't make you crazy.
Right. Yeah. Like if you don't believe in deities in like a D&D fantasy setting, you're a crazy person because, they walk around on the ground and, have
babies.
Yeah.
Like Ball is like, hey, yo, I want a bunch of kids.
Right. Like, hey, I'm Tiamat, and I want to break out of my prison, so I'm going to do that.
Five-headed multicolored dragon? Nah.
Yeah, no,
nah, that's not a thing.
Nope. You won't get me this time, Mr. Wizard. but then, you also get into those sort of edge case situations where the assumptions of the setting are such that you need to really apply, more of a logical approach. So like in Planescape specifically, where you have creatures that are sort of tied to not only an alignment but a worldview, right? Things like celestials who only see good as black and white, right? You're either good or you're evil, and that's the way that celestials have to structure the world in order to be beings of true good. If they were to start seeing the world, say, in Shades of Grey, suddenly that celestial is acting insane.
Yeah, or you get the rogue Modron.
Right. The one who is like the autonomous Modron? Oh, excuse me. A neutral Modron is not lawful enough, must be crazy.
Right, and of course, they're still, all their actions are very prescribed, from the perspective of like a quote-unquote normal human being. But for a Modron, crazy.
Right. But even within Planescape, right, like mortals are expected to have your normal kind of shades of gray morality. So it totally depends on who the character is themselves as to what insane behavior is. Because a mortal who starts to adopt that sort of black and white morality in Planescape would be considered insane. Or, you know, is possibly ascending to celestiality or something. In celestiality, that's my fetish.
Yes.
We can't record on the same day we do vampire.
I know. I see the world in black and white, but in sexy black and white.
Did you see how dark my black is? It's because it's sexier.
I believe that the world is a vampire, which of course is completely true. Right. Billy wouldn't lie to me.
You're insane if you don't trust Billy Corgan. Trust your friend Billy Corgan, Derek.
Look, here's a conspiracy I believe. Smashing Pumpkins sang the song 1979. Interview with a Vampire, published 1979. Think about it.
I mean, wake up, sheeple.
You know it's turning the sheeple gay too.
Of course, that's the homosexual agenda. All right, so insanity. I think there are two forms of insanity that manifest in RPGs. So, and going back to the very beginning, right, D&D versus Call of Cthulhu, you've got your sort of temporary insanity and your more permanent insanity.
Yeah, and if you think about it, these are handled very differently in-game, right? Like a temporary insanity is often sort of like handed down as an effect by the GM, whereas a permanent insanity is often like a result of roleplay decisions, or it could even be selected by the character at character creation.
Yeah, so temporary insanity, you know, this is your D&D stuff, like... being possessed by a mind flayer, right? Like, confusion.
But a sexy mind flayer.
Okay, stop. This is the sort of thing where you're just like induced to do something out of the ordinary or out of your control. Usually, this is like harming your allies, aiding your enemies, walking into a trap, or ignoring your own safety. You know, those types of behaviors.
Yeah, you get a lot of these in monster stat blocks, right? The dominate person, dominate monster spells, an Umber Hulk's confusion gaze,
Banshee's wail,
all that kind of stuff. Ideally, temporary, assuming you don't die. But you know, you're not responsible for the consequences of your actions. Like, you have no choice in attacking your allies. Right. They don't usually hold you accountable for those actions.
And what that means in the game is typically that you become part of a puzzle for the other characters to solve, right? It's not informing the other characters about your character, other than that you have weak wisdom saves, right? But what it is doing is saying, you know, as my allies and friends, you need to figure out what's causing this effect, how to snap me out of it, and then, you know, if you're in our group, how do I weaponize this? Like, how can I get a hold of that confusion ray? Because then I could do some damage with that.
Yeah, what if I gentle repose its head once it's dead? Does right. that work? Does that work? I can connect it to a battery.
What if I know exactly which beholder stalk?
I'm going to make a wand out of it. I like how it can also turn into a puzzle for the character who's affected, right? Because you are, you know, maybe getting directions from an enemy about how you need to act. Or, you know, you are confused and you are surrounded by an illusion, or your reality has changed, or whatever, right? The thing that is causing you to act out of character. It's kind of fun as a player to think, okay, how do I fulfill the letter of what is required of me, but not necessarily the spirit?
Yeah, it's like the player's chance to interpret the wish spell.
Right. And it's almost like it's the character's like internal like psyche underneath the effect trying to wriggle out of it.
Right, right.
And you know, those are fun to play, but they're more like an effect. They're like a sleep spell, or like, you know, being set on fire. You know, they're temporary. They last one or two rounds, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a ton to do with necessarily how to role play it, at least not long term.
Yeah, it's like a blessed spell, right? Like, it makes you it makes you behave in a certain way better, but it doesn't necessarily tell you anything about the character who's doing it. Right?
Right. If the bard is like, you know, singing a song of valor and like everyone is boosted because of it, that's not you.
Right. Right.
But if it's permanent, now it's a character trait.
Right. And so as we alluded to, right, this could be a form of damage, right, that has mechanical effects within your system. So that's how, like, Call of Cthulhu and the Warhammer games and, like, even Knights Black Agents, like, that's how they treat insanity. But I would argue that there's also just role-playing consequences that can turn a player, either turn a character insane or make them seem insane to other characters because of how they're acting, right? And the example was like Brand in the Morning Glory campaign when he thought that he had communed with the dead god Sybaris, like, and became a worshiper of a dead dragon god. Like, that was insane. That was a total mental break.
That makes perfect sense. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, given the evidence he was presented.
It made sense to Brand, but it made no sense to anybody else in the entire world.
Yes, that's true.
He was deliberately misled. It was a conspiracy against him.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's against you.
Right, including the Traveler up until he wasn't.
He was always on your side. The Traveler has always been with you. Sometimes he carried you.
No, that's insane.
It's true. He doesn't have feet.
Right.
Those can't be his footprints.
But in contrast, right, this permanent insanity is reflecting actual character development, right? It's defining who a character is over time. And that's, you know, it's important then to pay attention to, like, how you go insane, right? Like, what are the inciting incidents that cause this?
Right, both the things that are leading up to it as you probably like lower your sanity score or stability, whatever it is, and the sort of straw that broke the camel's back, right? Both of those probably manifest in some way in how your insanity plays out afterward.
Yeah, like, because if you think about it, like taking like a Call of Cthulhu investigator, right? Like, if you're continually losing your grip on reality and yet you're still compelled to continue investigating like this, you know, deep ones or whatever it is, right? Like, even when faced with like the knowledge that you are losing your grip, that's one, very dedicated to a purpose, but two, possibly insane in its own right.
Which maybe actually has some benefits when you're doing certain kinds of investigations.
Well, yeah. It certainly does in Warhammer. I'm too crazy not to deny the witch.
So the other thing you need to consider is how you may eventually come back from the brink of insanity, or you know, how you might end up being cured. Like, Eclipse Phase deals with plenty of mental illnesses, but you have a little artificial intelligence that can give you constant psychotherapy, which can eventually cure those mental illnesses.
Yeah, Knights Black Agents actually has a few different sort of places that you retreat to in order to, like, regain your stability, right? So they have, like, your solace. Like, I can't remember what all the terms are, but it's like, the place that you go to feel safe, like the person you go to feel safe, and then like the routine or whatever that you kind of like embrace in order to like kind of just regain your focus and, you know, come to grips with the fact that vampires are infiltrating all of governments across the world, and you've got a rather uphill battle.
And of course, if you're playing something like Call of Cthulhu, you don't come back.
Yeah, there ain't none. Like, all you can do is try and leave a trail for the next guy coming along to maybe pick it up and advance it a little bit further.
You're helping them, right? You're helping them.
Yeah, I'm cursing them with their own inevitable insanity. But yeah, helping.
All right, so if you are playing in a game where insanity or madness is playing a big role, either you've got actual rules. I think 5th edition has optional rules in the Dungeon Master's Guide. Mm-hmm. A lot of games have them just written straight into the normal game. So you'll be using those. But beyond those, how do you go about role-playing someone who is having a break with reality?
So I think there's two general ways, and it's all focused on who's actually leading the insanity effect, right? So the GM can do it, or the player can do it.
Oh, so the GM just says, you believe this, and then you do this.
Yeah, I mean, and like that might be the way that you do it for a temporary thing, right? Is like, I just take your action, right? Because you are, because you have failed this and are suffering from insanity, like you move one step closer to the tome.
I drink your action.
Right, exactly. not my favorite way to do it because it strips the player of agency, right? But it is a way that you can, if absolutely necessary, that you can advance the plot towards that insanity the way you need.
There's a certain kind of player who leans a little too heavily into insanity and madness that I would definitely take away their agency for a temporary like bout.
I'm temporarily insane. Cool, I harvest my colleague's organs. Great, campaign over.
Step one, get naked. No, you're dominated. You put in a parka. Now. For 1d4 rounds, you don a parka.
So I think the easier and better way to do that is to just modify the player's actions. You know, if they do have full agency and they're not being really like instructed by an outside force, right? If they're in control but insane, take the intent of their action, but then modify the outcome of it, right? So I want to, you know, rush into the fight and like protect my friend. Like perhaps you don't have full awareness of who your friends are, right? Or you can't quite identify who they are in the scuffle, right? So maybe it becomes a little more random than you would have expected. Sort of adding complications to the actions that players are already choosing.
Yeah, this is more of a yes, but.
Exactly.
You totally do that. Sort of.
Kind of. You totally attempt that.
Or you can also let the player make their own decisions, and then sometimes you just interject additional actions.
Right. Or say like, okay, your player has to do this. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or I guess your character has to do this. Your player has to get me pizza. How do you do that?
Look, Dragnoth the Ranger, your player must get me pizza.
Exactly. For truly you are insane.
You are compelled.
So I think the harder way to do this and the way that I have was challenged to do it in the Dynasty and Warranted campaign is to feed the player false information, right? Give them accurate information from their perspective, but not accurate from the reality of the world.
You mean like telling someone that Darth Vader killed their father when actually Darth Vader is their father?
Right. That, sure. I guess that's insanity.
From a certain point of view.
But the idea here is that you are letting the player act fully normally and not taking away their agency. You're just influencing the information that they have to base their decisions on.
Mm-hmm. And while this is the hardest way to do this in game, it is, I think, the most interesting and potentially most fulfilling because from the perspective of the character that is insane, they are acting completely rationally.
Right.
People always act completely rationally based on the information they have at hand and the their particular mental outlook.
Right. And so this can play out, you know, if you are under like a particularly strong charm effect, right? Like the big bad has you under the effect, your allies attack the big bad, and the way that you display this information to or relay this information to the character is so you see this crazed, like this blood crazed howling adventurer charge your best friend. What do you do?
It's coming right for us.
Right.
What is it holding in its hand?
Oh, a big sword.
I mean, yeah, it's an orc. Of course, it's holding a sword.
Right. It's kind of got a weird shape, though. And also, like, this way really only works if you have players that are, like, comfortable working within dramatic irony, right? Like, because the truth of it is going to be there are four players sitting around the table, and one of them is deliberately using flawed information in order to make decisions for the entertainment of everybody else at the table, right? So you need to be comfortable with that sort of detachment from the character, or at least detachment from the table as you're focused on your character.
Right, and then have a way to integrate the, again, very reasonable precautions that other characters in the group will take when dealing with someone who is consistently viewing the world in a skewed way.
Right.
So the other way to do this, which is perhaps even more complicated, but even more rewarding, is to have the player lead.
Yeah, so the player, as normal, fully plays their character, but then has to add that layer of insanity to whatever it is that they're doing. So the easiest way to do this for players is just to like lean into the chaotic element of insanity and use dice to determine actions and outcomes. So, you know, I like to do this if I am like possessed by an enemy in D&D, right? Like, I don't really want to have to choose which of my friends sitting at the table I'm attacking, especially when, like, you know, it could kill a couple of them.
It's me. You always attack me.
Well, yeah, right. Well, but that's...
But we're not friends.
I've so killed you first, and then I have to attack my friends. So it is helpful if you can just say, like, the dice is going to determine who my battle-maddened character attacks next, right? Like... I don't want to be, as a player, I don't want to be responsible for it, so I'll just leave it up to the dice. But for longer term, I think it's best to sort of get into your character's distorted worldview.
Yeah, you kind of do this with any character, right? You come from a particular province. The ranger like has particular favorite enemies. You know, you speak certain kinds of languages. You have a background as a soldier or, you know, a carpenter. And that colors the way that you view the world. Just in this instance, you think all robots are going to take over. And so you have a problem with the hacker.
Right.
Or, you know, you have an irrational fear of things that aren't particularly harmful. And, you know, maybe that doesn't come into play, but sometimes it totally comes into play.
Right. So another easy thing that you can lean into to distort your worldview at the table, it's also helpful because it's somewhat predictable for the players at least, is to give into like sort of emotional extremes, right? So you don't get angry, you go straight to rage, right? You don't like, you don't defend yourself. You are always like just outwardly violent. You might suffer from melancholy or grief with much easier triggering.
Yeah, if you think about this, it's sort of like shaving down a normal part of your like, emotional spectrum, right? You could just say you react very strongly in emotional ways to everything, but I think it's easier to pick one, maybe two of these emotions where you sort of skip the initial phases and go straight to the extreme.
Yep.
And, you know, you think about it, you're playing a barbarian who rages. It's a very common trope to say they get angry, like... very angry at the drop of a hat. You know, right. They take offense to the slightest thing.
And now you're in a rage. Congratulations.
And so we don't usually think of that as like a type of insanity or madness, but it fits the bill. And you can, you know, slightly adjust it to be some other kind of not necessarily combat-focused event or trigger. And boom, you've got a pretty easy makeshift mental illness that you're role-playing.
Yeah, whenever there's like a merits and flaws sort of system tacked on and you know, insanity or unhinged or those kinds of flaws are out there, I like to play them as hilarity, you know? So like you find things that aren't appropriate to laugh at, hilarious, right? Sort of that Joker or Harley Quinn kind of approach where it's off-putting, but it's not necessarily like unplayably damaging to advancing the plot.
Right, you're not at risk of murdering your fellow PCs, you know, right. But it is highly unnerving.
Right, yeah. And also, you know, like, you're not at risk of killing the king in the negotiation, but you are at risk of offending him.
Yeah, we weren't able to save the crown prince. That is hilarious.
Right. The whole kingdom's in upheaval. What a joke. Our whole feudal system is under threat.
No, we need to explain that he lost instead of cries.
Right.
Oh, it's too late. We're in jail.
Yeah, so as simple as swapping emotions, right? Like what normally makes you angry instead makes you laugh. Or, you know, what normally makes you sad instead makes you Hulk out.
Yeah, I like someone who is crying as they fight.
I'm just so sorry. I didn't want to do this to you. You just keep getting in the way of my axe.
I'm just spinning my axe over here, and it's not my fault that you keep running into it. No, these are tears of joy. These are tears of joy.
And I think the key here is that why they might be like unnerving and atypical within sort of a normal social interaction, as long as they're consistent, they still make for a playable character.
Yeah.
And that's the key here, right? Because like a lot of times, like just getting to the status of insane means you go NPC. And then there's not really a whole lot to play with it. But if you can introduce role-playing insanity earlier, then you still get a full character arc as that sort of descent into madness occurs.
Right. And if you can figure out ways to be what we might call from a game perspective, partially mad or partially insane, right? You're not unplayable. You're just off in a way that can have interesting role-playing repercussions. I mean, you can also just blunt an emotion, right? Like pick an emotion and your character doesn't really express or maybe even feel that particular emotion. Maybe right. All the others are pretty normal.
Yeah, I definitely like that, you know, because degree is an important piece of this. So like I definitely like it if you have an insanity track, and especially if you're suffering mechanical effects, right? You can kind of map emotional responses to those mechanical effects as well. So like you know, in like a D&D kind of damage track, you might have a penalty to certain saves as you increase your insanity. Well, what does that mean that like your wisdom save is a little bit lower now, right? Or your intelligence save is a little bit lower now. Like now that means you don't read people as well. How does that manifest in your emotional state outwardly?
Yeah. I also like the inversions that you get sometimes in some systems, like in 40K, if you're playing a Sororitas, right, who are canonically all like pretty insane.
They're insanely in love with the Emperor.
Right. Which is where like all of their abilities come from, right? Like they can't be corrupted by chaos because they are so insanely like
devoted.
Pure. Yes, exactly. Yeah. They'll actually get bonuses due to how insane they are on like willpower checks.
Right. Exactly. Like they have an iron will that cannot be like, and basically that means they can like resist longer the effects of insanity, so they can get kind of closer to the knife's edge, but they do eventually succumb.
But yeah, they have unshakable faith, which is so unshakable it's a version of insanity.
Right.
So if you're looking to incorporate madness and insanity effects into your games, start with just looking at the rules, because so many games have them, especially ones that are like merits and flaws, mm-hmm. have them listed typically as flaws.
Yeah, and they tend to be broken up for more than just insane, right? They're like insane in parts.
Right. I mean, like Eclipse Phase has things like synesthesia. You know, you get points for taking synesthesia as like a mental illness. Hypochondriasis.
Hey, can you please define those in layman's terms?
It mixes up senses. You can taste numbers.
Oh, sweet.
For example, smell colors.
So, like, an acid trip is your flaw?
Oh, yeah, basically. Quinn.
I was an idiot for taking drug addiction.
Yes, you totally were. Quinn, for example, has synesthesia and hypochondriasis, which I think gets me 20 points in a build.
Wait, is hypochondriasis, is that, like, just hypochondria?
Yeah, he believes he's suffering from cancer.
Okay.
Which canonically does not exist in the setting anymore because it's so far future.
Right. Okay, great. You know, that's going to be like the opposite of how cancer works, right?
I think so, yes.
Like, that's correlated to technology, not the other way around.
Well, we cured it. We cured like normal cancer in the setting.
Okay.
He's like, yeah, but I do have lung cancer. Yeah,
we cured it in this setting too.
Right. Also, he doesn't have lungs, right? He's a robot.
It's got a lot going on.
Right.
My uplifted ape is just addicted to murder.
which is literally a thing you can be addicted to in Eclipse Phase.
Yeah, because murder is a drug, yeah. Which makes you
literally
incredibly murderous. So we've actually drawn on a couple examples that we used in our own game. So in the Morning Glory campaign, there was also an encounter with a banshee where somebody suffered from the banshee wail and kind of became sort of possessed temporarily anyway. And we had to deal with that. We also had Bran's total break from reality for a solid like 3 or 4 levels in the mid game.
And of course we were dealing with Lou the entire game, who was our crazy warlock who believed that she was the reincarnation of a powerful entity from the Far Realm, which, spoilers, turns out she was.
Yeah, that wasn't insane.
No. Although, for like the entirety of the campaign until the last session, it was playing out as if she was insane because she was doing some crazy things.
Right. She printed pamphlets.
And pamphlets are always crazy.
She printed pamphlets to recruit for a cult named for herself, the Cult of Lou.
And I think the way that Susie played this out worked really well because it wasn't disruptive to the party because she was a helpful crazy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And all she really did was say, okay, I have a point of view. I have a perspective that this character fully believes in.
Mm-hmm.
And it is different from what probably any other character that we meet in Eberron is going to feel, but I'm going to stick by it because of course it makes perfect sense to this character. And so it just sort of became a theme, really. You know, there weren't a ton of mechanical effects. It was, you know, if she picks a magic item, she picks one along with the theme of I am the reincarnation of like a powerful entity from the Far Realm. Like, I like tentacles and stuff. And give me some chitin.
Yeah, I like tentacles and telepathy.
Right. There's a Dalkeer who like wants to essentially eat my soul. That sounds like a good idea. We should go find them and talk to them. Right? Right? Oh, wait, we have to kill them? All right, that's fine. We have to kill them.
Yeah, well, I gave you a chance. I thought you could be good, but you're not. So I will die.
As the reincarnation of a powerful entity from the Far Realm, I have to murder you now.
Right. Or die trying. Taste my eye storm.
Oh my god, yes. She, instead of casting Ice Storm, she cast Eye Storm.
I want you to know that I totally missed this in metagaming her one shot, but she totally used Ice Storm on us again. And I was just like, I was so prepped for dex saves. Stupid con save. It's very hard to play like a mounted combatant in 5th edition if you don't get targeted by dex saves much.
Oh.
Because you don't really get much of a bonus to con.
I mean, you always... The eyes always hit. You just need to take it.
Yeah, exactly.
The eyes have it.
The eyes have it, yeah. The eyes carry. Yeah, and then, we're in the middle of an insanity arc, really. Kind of the way that the Verza House plays with your perception and also like kind of is literally driving you guys mad. But mechanically behind the scenes, as you guys had the visions of the first night, it was like, you know, Draco passed his willpower, so he didn't suffer from the visions, but the other two did. So, you know, like that determined like how crazy these things got. And then I totally gave them a crazy perspective of what was going on.
Yeah. And I think one thing that worked well in sort of involving everybody in the crazy visions that some people were having.
Episodes, shall we call them?
Yes. is that it wasn't secret, right? There was no passing of notes like, oh, you see this and you see this, because we were all getting different information, right? But above the table, it was just being said out loud, which meant that even if you passed your like willpower check, as a player, you were still getting the information of like what kind of crazy things are going on. And in a setting like 40K, you don't actually know if you were the crazy one who's not seeing these weird things.
Or if it's the warp or, you know, something else that's inflicting it upon you.
Exactly. Now, that's a little more difficult in like a very realistic setting, but I think having it be above the table still helps everyone be involved in even just one player's psychosis.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction from like other forms of fiction where where the question of the reliable narrator is like more compelling when you're not sure if it is like the psychosis or the insanity speaking, or if it's the reality of the world around them, you know, like an American Psycho kind of thing, right? Mm. Where that question is sort of the fundamental like interest of the novel. But at a table where the audience has to be in on the narration, because it's not really feasible to like shunt four players off to the side to narrate to one, then the dramatic irony becomes important, right? And so like you want to handle it in a way that includes the audience, right, in what's going on, rather than sort of excluding them.
Yeah, and it's fun even if you're not the character who's dealing with the madness, to sort of sit there and go, oh boy, here comes an episode.
Yeah, like you're puzzling it out, right? Because mm-hmm. like, it becomes sort of, as the sane one, it becomes your problem to fix. Whether or not that character is on board with that fix is sort of up to them. Lou.
All right, and I think it does bear mentioning before we wrap up this episode that in real life, actual mental illnesses can be very debilitating. They can be sensitive subjects. And to be perfectly honest, a lot of game systems don't treat them with the kind of seriousness that they require, right? You get a system where it's like, I will get extra points if I take depression.
Right.
You know, which is like, okay, and now what am I going to do as a player in like acting out this depression? Well, it just happen off screen.
Yeah. But it's also like, how can I be respectful of the other people at the table who might have these like real problems, right?
Right.
Like,
or know people who do.
Yeah. Like you don't want to make a mockery of depression as a character flaw when somebody at the table might actually have trouble getting out of bed that day. You know, like it's just not fun to make that the joke. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm with you. We probably should have actually led with this. We've kind of been treating insanity and madness as a little bit of a binary, but definitely more of a descent towards like sort of a total break with reality, which, you know, fortunately in the real world is rare, rarely the way that actual people deal with it.
And in most games, you're dealing with, you know, the corrupting power of the warp.
Right.
You know, different kinds of magic. It's much less common, at least in RPGs, where you have an extremely realistic setting where like real life mental illnesses are sort of playing out. But if you think about a game that I think a lot of people enjoy playing that is set in like essentially what is the real world, you look at Everyone is John, which the central premise of that game is that everyone is playing the same character. They're multiple personalities of the same character.
Yeah, and so you trade off control of this character, John, right, who is actually the NPC, like is the GM's character, and then you're each of the personalities sort of speaking to him in his head. And the premise of the game is that you're trying to get John to do these like insanely over the top stunts, basically, like just ridiculously unrealistic actions in order to score points, right, to create this sort of slapstick narrative.
So this is essentially a mental illness
played for laughs.
Yeah. And I think it's just important to remember that you are making the same decisions that you're doing with any other game, is making sure everyone is okay with it and that we're all on the same page and that no one is feeling like they're being left out or they're being ridiculed for something they can't control.
Right. And also I think the fact that the game requires you to set up such like over the top kind of things, you know, like, I mean, one of the top tier goals like in games is like go to outer space. Like you're just a random person on the street and like you have to get to space somehow in this narrative, right? Like it's meant to be sort of so hyper real that it loses that sort of emotional grounding in reality.
So for the most part, I would say if you find yourself presented with a choice that really sort of underplays the seriousness of these in a setting that would actually take these seriously, that is played realistically, just don't do it. Avoid it. Because there's no drawback to like not having it in your game.
Right. And as always, right, if a player at your table is concerned about the nature of the subject matter, then move on from it. Just don't engage with it. Like, the happiness and safety of the players at the table is far more important than whatever dramatic value you were going to extract from it.
So in conclusion, I think we like to lean in the direction of like supernatural or like highly unrealistic versions of madness and insanity, the things that you know can track on your sheet, the things that cause strife within a party temporarily, or that they can make one character like extremely different from another in a way that gives them a unique perspective.
But I think we almost never do it in a way that's attempting to garner some sort of introspection, right? Like, leave insanity in the game as fantasy insanity, not some reflection of real life.
Yeah, in fact, don't try to reflect real life with it because it's a poor mirror.
Right. All right, do you hear that, Ishan?
No, Shane, I don't. I don't hear anything. I think it's in your head.
It's telling me to move on to the character creation forge.
Listen to it.
I'm resisting. Because before we do that, I'm going to talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at TotalPartyThrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.TotalPartyThrillCast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building the Mind Piercer.
That is like Snowpiercer, yes?
Yes.
It is a perpetual motion mind.
Perpetual motion mind breaker.
It is a brain on a train.
That keeps poking you. It's got a pierce.
Well, yeah, like all brains on trains.
No, wait, it's a train on a brain.
Trains on the brain.
I'm confused. You've done it. You've caused me psychic damage.
Which is what this build does, I believe.
Yeah, so the Mind Piercer uses psychic damage and fear and charm and dominate effects and confusion effects to destroy his enemies from inside and out.
Ah, the 1-2 punch.
Yeah,
from old, inside your brain.
The old enemy within and enemy without.
All right, so what is the build?
So it is College of Whispers Bard 3, Great Old One, Pact of the Blade Warlock 17.
17 Warlock. I think it's been a very long time since we've done this much Warlock, if ever.
Yeah, and it's a Pact of the Blade without Hexblade, so...
So we know this is a theme build.
Right. So College of Whispers is where we get that that psychic damage. So you get a lot of useful abilities with three levels of Bard. You get Jack of All Trades, Expertise, Song of Rest, and then Bardic Inspiration, which at third level you can use for Psychic Blades, which adds 2d6 psychic damage to any weapon attack.
You'll also get Words of Terror, which lets you force a Wisdom saving throw, or your enemy becomes frightened, which gives them disadvantage on... ability checks.
Yeah, unfortunately, that one is a rather short-lived frightening, because if you attack their allies, they also lose the status.
Oh, so you just need to separate them from the pack.
Right.
Attack the loner who has no allies or friends.
Right. And then 17 levels of Warlock gets us about as much Warlock as we've ever had in the Forge.
And it's a great old one.
Correct.
So you're going to get Awakened Mind, which lets you speak into other people's brains, which is creepy right off the bat.
Then you get your patron spells, which are going to include Dissonant Whispers, Tasha's Hideous Laughters, Dominate Beast, and Dominate Person. So you'll have a lot of mind-influencing effects there.
at level 14, you're going to get the really great Create Thrall, which basically just lets you permacharm one humanoid forever.
Forever, yeah. And then speak to it telepathically whenever you're on the same plane. Importantly, you'll get 9th level spells through Mystic Arcanum at level 17.
What would you take? True Polymorph, so that you're literally piercing their mind and turning them into, I don't know, a loaf of bread?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Well, there's some cool new 9th level spells. Which of those do Warlocks get? Do they get Psychic Scream? That would make sense. That's the one where your head explodes.
It would make sense.
You're my invocation.
It makes so much sense that it's the only new 9th level spell that Warlocks get.
Well, perfect. I think you take that one.
It's definitely on theme. There's also a couple invocations that make a lot of sense. You're, because you are Pact of the Blade, you've got some invocations that are locked up and just making your melee combat work. But you do have enough room for Dreadful Word, which lets you use Confusion once per long rest. And Bewitching Whispers, which lets you use Compulsion once per long rest.
Hear me out. You take the Levitate at Will invocation, and then you're a street magician, and you're convincing everyone you're David Blaine.
That is truly crazy.
Ooh, wait. And you can take Tomb of Levistus, which encases you in ice, like David Blaine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess anyone who desires to be David Blaine, including David Blaine, would have to be pretty crazy.
Wait, Shane. Ask me about my mind piercer.
All right, Ishan. Tell me about your David Blaine, mind piercer.
She's a street magician.
Named Chris Angel.
Davida Blaine. She started as a street magician, right? Hustling. But then realized that really when you confuse people enough, you don't need to then have them pay for your show. You can just take their money, right? And she was found out by a much more powerful wizard and basically given an ultimatum. You're going to straighten yourself out and use your abilities for good-ish, or I'm going to turn you into a loaf of bread because okay. I'm a 17th level wizard.
Really got Wonder Bread on the brain, huh?
Literally. In fact, I bet he did turn her into bread for 9 minutes. I think it's an hour. Right? For 59 minutes.
Right.
And then 50, back into her.
59 minutes and 9 rounds.
Right. And I stopped concentrating. How'd you like that? You didn't like that? You looked delicious. I almost cut off your crest.
God. Hey, if you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself? I know I would.
I think, actually, if you do try to cut off the crust, that deals 1 hit point of damage to the Wonder Bread and probably pops it.
Yeah, you would convert, yeah. Well, you gotta just dominate for another, day until you get your spell back.
Alright, so, yes. She has been set
on the... more to this character?
She's been set on the straight-ish and narrow-ish and, wants to build her abilities so that she can take out her arch-rival. That, Chris Angel.
All right.
Who's literally an angel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. A deva gone bad.
Oh. Are we back to vampire again?
Yes, always. We're never forgetting it.
God.
A sexy angel gone bad.
I hope we're done with this vampire-themed episodes.
Wait till we come back to World of Darkness. Time. We're going to do so much. We're going to do Changeling. We're going to do Werewolf.
Kill me now.
Well. Did you ask me to embrace you? I don't know how I feel about that. All right, Shane. Tell me about your mind piercer.
So my mind piercer is a spymaster. So normally we think of the spymaster as being the mastermind, right? Mm-hmm. But this is more of a surveillance state, mass collection, sort of troll farm, sort of intelligence agency, right? Within our little fantasy city. sort of less of a spider in a web and more of just a disseminator of disinformation. So using telepathy, sort of using all of these tricks at her disposal, she is able to, get in, do a job, steal something, influence an outcome, whatever it is, but then leave such a wake of confusion that she can never really be traced, right? There's just so much data that she's collected and accidentally released that you'll never uncover all of the important stuff within it.
Oh, I like it. Like, a sloppy MO is actually what covers your tracks.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like, Zuckerberg meets the Panama Papers.
Platymira Vooten.
All right. Before we wrap up, we want to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters.
Your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. So if you'd like to learn more, you can check out our rewards at patreon.com/totalpartythrill.
So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about random character creation. And we'll probably have a short section on how it's garbage.
And in the character creation forge?
We're building the Promethean.
Well, that's it for episode 142 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name. But either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.